Hey guys, welcome to the Twisted Sisterhood podcast hosted by Ashley Mitchell and Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, a podcast by birth moms for birth moms to give a platform to a silenced voice in the triad. You can find us on Instagram at Twisted Sisterhood Podcast, Facebook at Twisted Sisterhood, and Twitter at Birth Mom Podcast. Give us a follow and use our hashtag There Goes the Sisterhood. And if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. All right, all right. Welcome back to another episode of the Twisted Sisterhood podcast. I'm your co-host, Ashley Mitchell, and I am here with the better half of this podcast, for sure.
This is Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, and I think that Ashley's introductions keep getting more corny on purpose because she wants me to do it, and I don't want to do it.
If I do it poorly, you'll stop asking me.
No, and this might be the last time. I don't know. She might be pressuring me in new ways.
Fine. So, I'll clean it up.
Today we're talking about the stereotypes. I feel like the stereotypes of birth moms. But I think that this is going to be a much different episode than what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
When we talk about the stereotypes, we're trying to dispel them. I think for this episode, we're embracing them.
Embracing them a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we've been hearing a lot of stuff going around about it that are really bugging us.
It's really... It's getting on my nerves.
It's really getting in there.
Yeah.
So I think, and I want just, I'm asking everyone to sit with us. And, you know, for me, putting out the disclaimer, birth moms feel how they feel about their lived experience. And we get it. But I think that we have gone so far the other way to dispel this that we're missing the humanity in the individuals.
We're cutting out a huge portion of us too.
Yes.
It's it's a problem.
Yeah. So one of the things that just when you're talking about, when you're looking at birth mothers as a whole, so many, the majority, I would say, mm-hmm. and Kelsey will correct me if I'm wrong.
Always.
Is that this is not the first trauma for most.
Yeah.
They have whole lived experiences, generational issues, underlying problems that are not addressed or seen or a part of the conversation we only talk about when their world collides with professionals, adoptive parents, and this unexpected pregnancy. And then we just build this story in that moment forward and ignore all the stuff from the past.
Right.
So we're missing a huge part of the conversation about how we got here to begin with. I mean, these are smallest fire traumas happening sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me personally, while I had struggles prior, the pregnancy was the crisis for me. So it was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for you too.
Same with me, yeah.
But I do think from working in adoption and seeing some of the populations that are served, we are a little bit outliers, but we don't want it to seem that way in terms of support, in terms of community. We don't want to be the outliers.
Yeah.
We want this to be a much more inclusive community and environment.
And yeah.
So that's why we thought this was necessary today.
Well, and it's so interesting because I hear some of these conversations and people will list out the stereotypes that really offend them. And I'm like, I'm every single one of those things. Like,
yeah.
I am the stereotype. Like,
yeah.
I had all of those things.
Yeah.
And definitely the pregnancy and the placement was, again, a very unique, small percentage of us that was the first trauma.
Right.
But all of the crap in the aftermath is right on point with some of the other women's previous stuff.
Yeah, totally. So if you're sitting here itching and wondering what we're talking about, here's the narrative I keep hearing since, I don't know, for years now. It's really getting under my skin. I see this narrative a lot of times it's coming from birth moms. They're like, well, not all birth moms are drug addicts. Not all birth moms have mental illness. Not all birth moms are homeless. Not all birth moms deal with poverty. And I want to be like, so what's your problem? I'm waiting to hear what your problem is. What's wrong with you then? This isn't a normal like life experience that we've gone through, right? Yeah. Like this is an adverse like birth and postpartum experience. Yeah. This is an adverse life experience. So what is
if
wrong
you're not
with
all
you
of
then?
Those things, why what? Aren't you parenting?
What? Right. Like, what's your problem then? Like, you're pointing out everybody else's problem. So what's your problem?
Yeah.
Like, that might seem really harsh, but I don't care. And I just feel like when we are saying, well, I'm not A, B, and C, I'm better than
I'm better
them.
Than.
I know so many birth moms that struggle with substance use disorder, that struggle with mental illness, that struggle with just generational poverty and just really hard times that they never asked for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm wondering why we're excluding them from these narratives.
Yeah. It really is concerning to me when we've put ourselves in positions as fellow birth moms with this commonality of this horrific thing that happened to us, and we're still putting ourselves on these different pedestals and looking down and judging for the same crap that happened to you that happened to me, but I'm better than you because I handled it better.
I'm not going to place birth moms into a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Because we're still at the bottom, babe.
Yeah.
We're still at the bottom.
Whether you think you're better than me in this specific class, we're still at the bottom in the big picture altogether.
Well, and you're tokenizing yourself. And for what? So that your agency will like you. Okay. Good luck, sweetheart. Good luck, sweetheart.
So here's one of the things with this. And everyone comes to their own whole truth about their lived experience at different times and what that really looks like for them. And this isn't saying that you can't move forward and be okay. It doesn't mean that you're not allowed to be successful and have good things happen in your life. It doesn't mean that you can't feel like you made the absolute number one decision that you were going to make.
Totally.
But to say that you're better than someone who went through the same thing.
Or just to imply.
And it's like, well, not all of us are drug addicts. So what if they are a drug addict?
What's your point? What's wrong? Okay. So she has different struggles than you.
Yeah.
Who cares? So what? Who cares?
Yeah. So you're judging her for how she chose to repair the shit that happened to her? Right. I don't get that.
Or you're judging her for coming to the table with less than what you had?
Yeah. Like,
that's such a joke. I'm so sick of hearing about it, honestly. And yes, this episode may seem really harsh, but we're calling you out. If you have done this, it's okay. Just don't do it again.
Yeah.
Not on my watch, okay? Because I'm sick of hearing about it.
Well, and I look back, I mean, I'm 17 and a half years post-placement. I've been in this a long time. I go back and read my own early stuff and I would slap me if I could see me back then. And so there's definitely narratives that have shifted and truths that have been replaced that have formed a more whole story for me. But I'm 17 years out. And people look at me and they see what they see on social media and I get to speak on big stages and I get to do all these things. They have no idea what we are dealing with in my own personal constellation, the substance use and shit that I still deal with, the mental health shit that I'm still dealing with. People have no idea, but they think because I have adopted parents. This really like makes me want to throw up a little bit, but I have adopted parents come up to me all the time at conferences like, I wish my child's birth mom was you
you. People say that to me.
And
too.
I'm like, okay. First of all, ew.
Well, it's just there's so many layers to that because it's dismissive of your child, first and foremost. Like, your child is who they are.
You're rejecting
their
actual existence.
Yeah. That's their origins. That's who they are. That's where they came from. That's gross. Don't say that. But also, like, for me, I'm like, well, I'm put on a pedestal for no reason whatsoever because, you know us from the internet.
Yeah.
Like, let's calm down.
Yeah.
It's not that serious. And you don't know me like that. And I don't tell you guys anything. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I'm a steel trap, baby.
Yeah.
So it's just a little misguided. A little.
And I think we just really need to pay attention to that kind of language. And just what Kelsey was saying, I think it's so important that the dismissal of that you believe there's something wrong with your child because their biological mother is making choices that you're uncomfortable with. Their existence is bad because you think she's bad.
what's the thing we always, well, yeah, our child's birth mom, she's just going through some things right now. She's making some unhealthy, unwise choices.
Yeah, unwise choices.
I'm like, okay, like, do you remember what happened to her?
Yeah.
And do you remember what she's gone
How through? Did we get here?
Yeah.
Because it's like, how are you so oblivious to what she's going through? Because you met her at a time and painted this picture of who she is and what she's doing for you, or how you're saving her. And now she's in the throes of it, and you can't understand why she's making choices or acting, quote unquote, the way that she is.
Oh, yeah. And just addiction is a bitch.
Yeah. Yes. Like, and people, when prospective adoptive families are coming into these spaces and they're considering and they're looking at the cases, if you are not educated, prepared, or willing to learn about addiction and substance use, then don't step into those spaces, because you will never see her as a human. You will never love her. You'll never acknowledge the fact that these are women that have experienced significant loss.
Yeah.
And substance is no joke.
No, it's not.
You know, I'm sitting in this space 17 years and I'm going through a lot of stuff where I'm having to share and expose a lot of stuff that I'm going through that makes me very vulnerable. That I have to expose things that I've been trying to hide and keep a secret from, you know, it even within my own constellation.
Right.
Because if I'm found out, you can't unknow it.
Yeah.
And now people look at me differently. Now they know these things about me and they're like, oh, she's been being fake and hiding. No, I'm hiding it because you're going to look at me like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is no joke. So even 17 years later, even for someone like me who has all the resources and all the support, I am still in the throes of it.
Yeah. No, totally. And I think that I don't want to paint this as like it's an easy thing to do. It's not an easy switch to flip sometimes,
yeah.
You know, if there have been adverse effects as a result of substance use or mental health issues, and it's hard, but like it's important.
Yeah.
And so
for me, it's just like I want to sit with the women that are in the throes and going through it and in addiction and in their mental health and say, hey, you belong here too.
Yeah.
We have this commonality of relinquishment that doesn't make me better than you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing is like, if I believe that I deserve community and support and inclusivity, then I think that they deserve it even more.
Even more.
Because we can't push them to the outskirts. Like, they deserve to be in the circle too.
And our fight in post-placement care has been about that, to making sure that anyone can come to the table. And I'm not trying to exploit the trauma or have it be this issue, but we're excluding them completely. They have been excluded from the support and resources.
And I think they even get excluded in advocacy as well.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about things like, I want informed consent, I want separate legal representation, I want post-placement care, I want them to have access to a variety of post-placement care, whether it's support groups or therapy or whatever, I'm speaking for all of those parties. Mm-hmm. I don't just think that just because there's plenty of women, and some of them are probably listening and they would agree that they were not or maybe are not candidates for parenting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a realistic option for them. And it wasn't a realistic option for them at the time. I still want informed consent, separate legal representation. I still want them to have access to all of those things. I want them to be able to make that choice of their own volition in the right way.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be coerced or forced or threatened with a call to CPS. I want her to be made, you know, aware of her realistic options and with a neutral party and all those things. But they deserve those things just as much as
we do. That's right. So, even if they know or parenting is never going to be on the table, they deserve the exact same ethical and legal processes as anybody else.
Yep.
I don't care if she is on heroin at the time.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And so that's my beef.
Yeah.
You know?
And like I said, you know, for the women that are going to be like, well, they judge us, they just automatically assume that that's what we're like. Yeah. There's a problem on the other side too.
Yeah, sure. No, I get that too.
Yeah.
I get that too. And, you know, like, do any of us want to be, do I want anybody to look at me and be like, that girl, she must have a drug problem? No, but also like there's more humane ways to have that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's more humane ways to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And educate. You don't have to keep saying, well, I'm not. I'm like, what is it about you that people think that?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I really would love the birth moms to be more united in this commonality of relinquishment, mm-hmm. even though our individual experiences, demographics, race, religion, all of these things make our individual experiences so unique.
Yeah.
But the commonality of relinquishment still exists.
Yes.
And none of us are better than the other. We all experience this.
Yeah.
And so to be more united, we would have a stronger voice and representation if we could come together more.
I also want to talk about beyond the circumstances of placement. I also want to talk about the inclusivity of women with different feelings about their experiences.
Yes.
So like women who regret their decision, women who feel confident in their decision and convicted that it was the right choice for them. I want more inclusivity in the variety of experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even women that use the same agency who had different experiences with that agency.
That's right.
I am not going to shill for some agency just because I had a good experience or she had a good experience or I worked there or whatever. If you had a bad experience, then you had a bad experience.
Then you had a bad experience.
Yes.
That's right.
If you regret your decision, if you feel years later that you wish that you didn't sign those papers, you're in my community.
Yeah.
If you feel that you did make the right decision despite all the hard, you're in my community.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. I'm sick of seeing these people like, oh, well, she regrets her decision, so she's anti-adoption and she's or she is anti-adoption.
Yeah.
Because of what happened to her.
And
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want me to do about that?
Yeah.
Like she had a bad experience. I'm not gonna sit here and try to convince her that she didn't. What a waste of my time and hers.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to do a shameless plug, obviously, for our curriculum, but because I have been excluded from places because I didn't have the right post feelings about adoption. I have been hated and kicked out of groups because I didn't hate adoption enough at the time, or I've been kicked out of groups because I didn't love it enough at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I was always in this middle limbo of like not knowing. I wasn't anti enough, but I wasn't pro enough. And it's a complicated space to fit in. And so being able to sit in neutral groups that are individualized, regardless of how you come to the table, are very few and far between. And I think we do a really good job at writing curriculum like that.
Oh, you do. I know you do. Your groups are the best one that I've been to by far.
Yeah.
And I really do think that you honor the full breadth of experiences.
Yeah. One of the other things about that too is allowing moms to change their mind throughout their entire lifelong experience how they feel about it.
Yeah. And I think one of the most significant parts about that is learning how our adoptees feel about it.
Yeah.
That has a huge influence on how we feel about it.
Yeah.
Because ultimately we do want, even if I regret it, I ultimately do want them to feel healthy and okay about it.
Yeah.
Because our decision has huge lifelong effects.
Yeah.
So I do want him, but I'm not going to try to influence that. And ultimately his feelings about the adoption are going to forever influence my own feelings.
Your own feelings about it. Well, when we were talking about that in the car, it takes one little statement from our adoptees, our children in these open adoption to blow the shit wide open about how we feel.
Oh, yeah. Like, even one question.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, what? you know what I mean? And it just kind of wakes you up a little bit. Yeah. And so that could happen to you at any time. Not to scare you, but kind of to scare you.
Yeah.
And
it's okay to change your mind about how you feel
about
it.
It's okay to change your mind. You're not married to those feelings.
Yeah.
We saw a post today from our friend Gretchen Sisson.
Yeah.
She's a sociologist. She has a book coming out in February of 2024 called Relinquished.
You're going to get to hear more from her. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love Gretchen. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi, Gretchen.
So she has a book coming out on this study that she did. She is with UCSF, University of California, San Francisco. And she worked on things like the Turnaway study.
Yeah.
Which was a 10-year-long project and now book that detailed women who were denied abortion care, what happened to them afterwards. And so
the Turnaway study was really great and it was really powerful to me.
Read the studies. It's super powerful, really impactful. But Gretchen posted something today, and I think it is a snippet from her book. Mm-hmm. And do you want to read it?
Yeah. So when we're talking about being allowed to change your mind and new information coming in and your adoptee starting to have a voice in this and how you feel about that, it's really interesting. And especially because I'm a huge Handmaid's Tale fan.
I can't watch it.
And Kelsey can't watch it. So I'm like, you know, we've done all the unpackings of the comparisons in adoption with Handmaid's Tale. And so this was really interesting. So Gretchen posted, she said, the first slide, an expert from The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Second slide, an expert from my forthcoming book, Relinquished. The moreover, top agencies and promotive nonprofits like Brave Love become, while showcasing the stories of Happy Birth Mother, the more I remember this expert from The Handmaid's Tale. What else can I say? When I asked Relinquishing Mothers which pop cultural portrayals they found the most resonant, they were nearly unanimous in the dislike of Juno. Okay. With the carefree happy ending, and many felt drawn to The Handmaid's Tale, which I totally resonated with completely. Many mothers like Taylor, one of the birth mothers that she interviewed, told me that they'd shared happy, shiny stories of their adoption shares online while they were in their honeymoon soon after relinquishment, and that no space was made for them to share their stories as their feelings became more critical. Our stories of adoption are so often curated for the feel-good consumption. So one of the things that Taylor said, she said, when reading these Brave Love posts, remember Taylor, who had also shared her story with them during her adoption honeymoon. And she said, Taylor said, this is the birth mom. It's really hard for me to look at those posts or interact with birth moms who are still in that unicorns and rainbows mindset about adoption. I was there. There is still evidence out there of me feeling very positive about adoption. There are some articles and blog posts that I wrote. I was feeling great about adoption. Now I've gotten so much of it taken down as I can. Because she just changed, things happened in her life to change her mind. And when we have big, huge nonprofit organizations that are pushing this narrative, you're going to find that very small percentage of women that believe that they're better than.
Yeah.
And it is so damaging for all of us that fall all over the place.
Yeah.
We're all over the place. And so then these women, we see it in support groups all the time, feel like they're doing something wrong. Am I healing wrong? Is there something extra wrong with me because I don't relate to that narrative?
And we lose them.
Yes. And it's hard to find a spot. They will not come back if they are made to feel like they're doing something wrong.
Yes. And something is wrong with them inherently because they don't feel the same way. The support groups, the purpose of support groups are not to come and have a big circle jerk over adoption. Am I right?
It's true, though.
It's true.
But when you have organizations that are constantly posting, the stigma persists. We need to break the stigmas.
Well, and we don't even need you to come every month.
Yeah.
If you're in a good place and you think, I don't want to go because I don't really want to... I don't want this to get me down for the week. I don't want to hash this out right now. I'm in a good place. Don't go.
Yeah, don't.
You don't have to manufacture problems for group, and you don't have to go and be brought down by some of the stories because, you know, we all kind of can have that effect and feed off each other a little bit because it's empathy and that's what we do. But you don't have to go every month, and you can go when you're struggling. We want that to be an outlet for you when you're struggling. And you need support. That's the point.
Yeah. And if you have an agency that is pressuring you to come because they want their numbers or their success rates to look good, they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
They are there for them if and when you are ready or decide you want to come, not the other way around.
Right.
They don't need to use you to look good.
Right.
If you need support, true support will be there no matter what.
Right. Yeah. And so it's important that, you know, when moms are struggling, that they have that outlet. If you're not, do your thing. And if you, but also, I really enjoy my relationships, my friendships with birth moms, because we've grown in friendships so much that we don't even talk about adoption sometimes. Yeah. We talk about what's going on with our kids and what's going on in life, or I guess my job is adoption, but sometimes my friends' jobs aren't adoption, so we talk about their jobs instead. And so it's nice to just build community, and you don't always have to go to support group. You can go out to lunch or go out for coffee with your birth mom friends and have friendly, upbeat community as well. Yeah.
Well, and having curriculum and materials that aren't about adoption, but just about life, about being women, about the struggles of whatever phase you're in is helpful too. Because again, sometimes adoption is the smallest fire that you're dealing
with. Totally.
Even 17 years later.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk about this whole thing with stigma. Because I think it goes hand in hand with stereotypes. Because I keep hearing this thing about stigma.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we have to reduce the stigma. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I don't want anyone to be shamed for their decision. But also, respectfully, I think there's bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. I think that we are focusing on the wrong thing to push agenda that just doesn't match anymore.
I think that also, in place of stigma, what we should be doing is education on what women are up against and what they're facing when they pursue adoption.
Yeah.
Because I think automatically it gives people empathy for these women and understanding way more than it does to say, I want to change your thought process and I want you to see her as brave and strong. I think that'll come.
That's going to come anyway. That's going to be a part of.
But I think the education on what these women are dealing with, what they're up against, and what the loss and grief looks like on the other end, I think that naturally does that. And in my experience, that is what has changed hearts and minds much more so than telling them, but she's so selfless.
Yeah. Well, in this, like, even just the definition of stigma talks about like a mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. So when you're just saying, like, to break that down, you're looking at this woman with this mark of disgrace that she's homeless. Do you know anything about the housing markets? Do you know anything about the fact that she's maybe a felon and can't apply for an apartment complex because she can't put it on her application?
Right.
Do you know anything about what she had to flee to be on the street to begin with?
Right.
Do you know anything about what she's up against just for lowest level housing?
Right.
Or are we just going to say she's homeless but not care about any of the issues?
Right. And for someone that is homeless, I promise you, the stigma is not her number one concern.
Yeah, she does not care that people are judging her. She cares about the fact that she doesn't have anywhere to sleep.
She's sleeping in the rain, dude. I don't think she cares that someone wants to sew a scarlet letter on her dress.
She doesn't. That's the thing, that the majority of the women that I have seen, that I've worked with, that have been in our support groups, that is the least of their concerns.
Oh, yeah.
They don't care that people are judging them, that they...
I think it's hard when, like, family members and people, like, disenfranchise your grief and your loss. But I don't think in my life, like, the stigma has been pretty low.
Yeah.
And it's not the main concern. I am much more concerned about them getting the help that they need in more arenas than just adoption.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in housing.
Yeah.
In substance use, like rehabilitation.
Access to mental health support.
Mental health support, health care. Like, these are all parallel and intersecting fields that affect birth moms. And ultimately, you know, a lot of times put her in a corner into placing in the first place. And so I am much more concerned about some of those things than reducing stigma.
Yeah.
Do I think that stigma is, I don't know, important? Yeah, I guess, like, I don't want someone to be shamed. I don't want someone to feel like, you know, they're a bad person for doing what they did. I don't want them to feel that way.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, these are feelings and we have grief and loss that are much more significant, and they need to be addressed desperately.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you this question about, because, like, I'm a true crime junkie and I'll watch everything. I'll watch anything. And I watch those kinds of things and I go, well, at least I'm not that guy. Like, my life could be way worse.
Yeah.
And I wonder how deep-rooted that is for birth moms to prove that they're okay, maybe to themselves and maybe to the people around them, that they keep sharing these things.
Well, I think it has a huge, it is happening because what we just talked about at the beginning of this episode with the stereotypes, I think that they do that all the time. Well, at least I'm not her.
At least I'm not her.
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
And I think you really, we have to understand too, the general public. I mean, you're talking about, you know, we use these blanket statements of adoption, and underneath that blanket, you've got, you're looking at foster care situations and kinship situations and domestic infant adoption situations. We're all coming from so many different spaces. Mm-hmm. And so women are fighting so hard to say, I'm not one of those moms.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't abandon or neglect or abuse. Like, I made this choice. Like, the difference between how birth moms that placed and chose relinquishment at birth and chose their families versus how they view women who have had their rights terminated in foster care.
Right.
Again, believing that they're better. At least I'm not her.
Right. Right.
And that's a huge problem.
Yeah. No, it is. And so, yeah. And I just think I'm not really buying it with the stigma thing.
Yeah.
I'm just not really buying it. I see women all over the internet begging for so much more than reducing stigma.
Yeah.
That I'm like
screaming for it.
I'm like, pay attention.
They're not
pay
listening. Attention. They're not being heard.
Yeah.
They're not being heard. And there's not resources and support and money.
It's kind of like just like, it just feels a little like gaslighting because you're like, please, may I have some counseling? Oh, are you feeling ashamed? Don't feel that way. You're so great.
You're amazing and selfless and did this thing. You don't need to feel bad about it.
Like, but I do. And but
the gaslighting is absolutely real when they're trying to
like
dismantle a stigma or stereotype.
Yeah.
When a woman's coming and saying, no, but this is actually a thing.
This is, I'm like, yeah, yeah. I actually am that stereotype.
But I actually am that stereotype.
But I still need support.
Yeah. So I've been all those stereotypes.
Yeah.
I've gone and needed help for jail and probation and walking the court system. I've needed help in substance.
It is actually kind of odd that that's the audience too, that the audience is like women who a lot of times maybe don't need to place. It is kind of weird that that's the audience because if you wanted to, I don't know, I guess.
Not be lumped into that category.
Yeah.
Then why are you here?
Right. It is a little odd to me.
Yeah.
I don't really understand the model. I'm not saying that they should change the model. I think that they should abandon it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not on the board, so who cares?
We're all still in the bottom together.
But also I wanted, okay, but also we talked about last night when you were at my house, because you're in California. Last night we talked a lot about how that narrative of their tactic of reducing the stigma, right? Their tactic, which is different than ours, which is to say, you're so brave, you're so selfless, you're this, you're that, you're a hero, you're amazing for what you did, and blah, blah, blah. They are building you up to break you down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you, that does not last forever.
No.
That
you cannot maintain that.
Putting on a pedestal that you cannot keep up.
Yeah.
You will fall off that pedestal and it's really painful.
Yeah. The train is going to go off the track.
Totally. I mean, it happened for me probably 2 years post-placement.
Yeah. So mine hit five.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we see that we really between that 2 and 5 year, 6 year post-placement mark is kind of in the sweet spot of where silence happens. A lot of birth moms stop interacting in their adoption relationships and those kinds of things start to come because you can only fake it for so long.
Oh yeah. You're putting on a show.
Yeah.
And we're not even, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted to say like, oh, you actually are regretting your decision or whatever. We're not like putting words in your mouth, but we are saying that like that facade is not, it's not real. And there's like when I think a couple of years ago, adoptees really started talking about how when they're told that you were placed because
she loved you so much that she gave you to somebody else.
That is not, actually rooted in truth. And so that's not what they want to hear. They want to hear honesty. So yeah. I didn't place him because I loved him so much. I did love him so much. I do love him so much. And that is still true. That can still be true. But I placed him because I didn't have anywhere to go if I brought a baby home. I didn't have any money. I didn't have access to, I didn't have childcare. I didn't know who was going to watch him while I went to work. There's stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
but those are those the things are you need the to focus on. The reasons.
On why he was placed. And, but that doesn't mean I don't love him so much. Yeah. There's nothing in that that's saying that.
That's
you
right.
Know? And you
that's
can
right.
still... You can still address that as well. But to equate love with relinquishment
or abandonment
or something, rejection, those are those things that are going to come through really confusing for adoptees. Yeah. And so for me, I think that that reducing stigma tactic of building us up like that is reinforcing those narratives. And it makes it really confusing for us to untangle all of that when we do fall off the pedestal. And I think if we just, we have to pursue honesty always from the very beginning. And so that we don't put ourselves on a pedestal to fall off. We just work on healing. We just work on grieving and mourning and that open adoption relationship, if that's something.
And you just peel back layers to deeper truths.
Yeah.
If it has to start on the surface level, but it has to start in truth. I get grief all the time. All the time I post about how I was selfish. I don't care. I will fight to the death over the fact that I was very selfish in why I placed. But I cannot tell you the number of people that try and tell me, stop saying that you were selfless. You were selfless. No, I was selfish. There were things that I was not willing to give up, that I was not willing to do.
Totally, same.
And telling me that I'm not allowed to feel selfish or own that I was selfish, it doesn't make me a bad person because I'm owning the fact that I was selfish in some of my decisions.
Right.
Because I still loved him. I still had all of these issues, but selfishness was one of them.
Yeah. And same for me. I think that it doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah.
It never tells the whole story, but neither does saying that you were selfless. It doesn't tell the whole story. But I think just being honest about some of those aspects of your decision and some of your shortcomings.
Yeah. I couldn't start to really, 5 years post-placement, you know, failed suicide attempt. I had all this stuff happening. Because I wasn't owning the things that were true.
Right. And this is also not true for everybody. I don't believe that all moms are selfish because they choose to place their child for adoption. Yeah. I don't believe that because like we just mentioned earlier, like some people are not candidates for parenting.
Yeah.
Some people cannot get
it. And that is the best choice.
Cannot get it together, like housing and whatever before, you know, in that short few months, they just can't get it all together in time. And that's a huge tragedy. And in my mind, and a failure, a policy failure for our country. But I do think that for us personally, totally, that selfish aspect of not wanting to change our lives, being on track for our goals and not willing to cave on any of those. And but we learned the hard way.
And so however you feel about your lived experience and however that is playing out in front of you is how it's supposed to be. We're not here to say that it has to be one way or the other. But to own your part in it.
Mm-hmm. Figure out what that is.
What that is. And to stop disregarding people that don't view it the same way as you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we are all still commonality of relinquishment.
Yeah. That is the commonality. Yeah. There is no other thing. And you can try to construct a vision of what a birth mom is or what, you know, try to find other commonalities. You'll find some.
Yeah.
But there will be no blanket commonality except for the fact that she relinquished.
That we
there
relinquished.
Will be no 100% except for the fact that she relinquished.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, I mean, you know, but I think inclusivity is important. This episode, we're calling you out a little bit on your shit, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And be more inclusive in your community and don't think that you're better than her because you're not.
And everyone deserves the same kind of equal care.
Totally. Equal care, in the aftermath. Equal advocacy and everything. Yeah. So,
that's all.
That's all.
For this episode.
We'll see you next time.
I hope you'll come back next time. We might be canceled.
Cancel me. I wish you would. I wish you would. Please let me go.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.